You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
This is Life.
The border.
The bill is passed.
Restrictions.
Variants.
More vaccinations.
This is
55 KRC, the talk station. Friday Eve.
I'm the dude, man.
And I'm Brian Thomas. My producer, executive producer, is Joe Strecker. And happy, as I said, Friday Eve. I always like to call it Friday Eve. Today on the 55 KRC Morning Show, this beautiful April 22nd, Friday Eve. Oh, and I didn't say it yesterday, but happy birthday to my daughter. We celebrated her birthday yesterday. 25. I'm old. Boy, that's a weird feeling. Anyway, Dan Reginold. We've heard from Dan on many occasions. Of course, Frame USA owner and CEO, I guess. I'm not quite sure what title he gave himself over there, but more fundamentally, in addition to the Fill the Truck campaign and his other charitable work, he is responsible for the Empower You series of learning. It's each Empower You seminar has a subject matter or topic. It's always very interesting, sometimes political and sometimes not. But today, Dan is going to join us to talk about a lawsuit filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio. Dan Reginold versus, among others, the Ohio State Board of Education. Why would Dan sue the Ohio State Board of Education? We'll get the details from him. But ultimately, it comes down to the Ohio State Board of Education's refusal to entertain public comment regarding a shift in their educational focus. Namely, they're going to be teaching critical race theory, Marxist-inspired critical race theory, along with that 1619 project, among other things. And although the provisions within the Ohio State Board of Education rules allow for and call for periods of public comment, on this particular subject matter, on this project that they want to incorporate into your child's learning, critical race theory and the 1619 stuff, they won't allow anybody to speak on it. They refuse to entertain a word of comment on the subject matter in violation of their own rules. So Dan's off to court, and it's all spelled out in a very lengthy complaint. I'm sure Joe printed it out for me. It's, I think, 40-some-odd pages. It's got the resolution in the back. The resolution that was passed by the board, resolution to condemn racism and to advance equity, there's that word, and opportunity for black students, indigenous students, and students of color, which was indeed adopted, along with, again, the 1619 Project stuff. So, you know, Dan went through all the hoops. He made a formal request to speak. And he was advised of this rule change. He then followed up and asked the parties responsible for the rule change, namely, I believe, Laura Kohler, as president of the Ohio State Board of Education. She is the one who said, sorry, sucks to be you. We're not going to be taking public comment on this. Foregone conclusion. This is your educational system. These are the power players who are teaching your children and indoctrinating your children, and particularly, I suppose, you know, indoctrinating people of color, black people, into thinking that every single white human being is a racist. And, of course, to the white children in the class, they're telling you that you're inherently racist. You just don't know it. So feel bad and feel guilty about your young childhood life, because you, young white people, are responsible for the plight of any downtrodden person of color. There you go. That's the education system. Dan does not abide. Dan was going to argue and make his points to the Board of Education, who may have been put in a spot. Oh, my God, we're going to have to answer questions about this? No, we won't be even putting ourselves in that position. So I wish Dan the best of luck in the suit. We'll get his motivations, why he's doing it. He doesn't have young children and currently in the education system, to the best of my knowledge. So he just is a concerned citizen. Tom Clavin joins the program with a new book, Blood and Treasure. Interestingly enough, just written up a book review in the Wall Street Journal on it, just talking about how awesome this book is. It's Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. It's the whole history story of Daniel Boone, warts and all. And he is a rather interesting character, really amazing guy. Well, Tom Clavin's also a well-known author, but I'm talking about Daniel Boone. We'll hear from Tom at 7:40 on that. Jack Carr, who's a former Navy SEAL, got a new book, Devil's Hand. We'll learn about that one at 8:05, followed by our aviation expert, Jay Ratliff. Airline industry increases their loss estimates. We have international travel soft and little tea leaf reading into the future from the State Department. And a couple of other items with Jay Ratliff. Of course, your calls are always welcome. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. Democrats are going to be voting on D.C. statehood today, calling for the Senate to end the filibuster so they can make Washington, D.C. a state in violation of the Constitution of the United States of America. There are going to be challenges to this one. But, again, they'll have to end the filibuster to bring this one about. Tell me that isn't a power grab. You got 700,000 residents of D.C., and most, I believe, a large percentage are black. They are solidly Democrat, and this, of course, would create two new senators. There's a shock, providing them with, of course, a majority in the Senate. Also, additional representative will be sent over the House, so they get an increase in power. And it's the only reason they want to do this. And I had a conversation with Judge Napolitano some months ago, I believe it was last year sometime, about how insane the proposal is, just from a geographic standpoint. What is within the state and what isn't. Journal had a better idea, and why don't we do what we did before, which is just seed back land to Maryland and Virginia. Apparently they've done this before. In 1846, Congress reinstated Virginia's control over the D.C. suburbs of Arlington and Alexandria. Those, I guess, were part of the capital at one point. Guess what? They're not. They're in Virginia now. So why not give all the residents of Washington, D.C., whittle it away on one side and the other, to Maryland and Virginia? They've got representation now in Congress. Congratulations. That would also bump Maryland would get one additional congressional seat. So problem solved. But obviously creating an independent state and supplanting the district, unconstitutional. Of course, the founders intentionally created a federal district under the control of Congress because they didn't want the federal government to be subject to the sway of any one state. You know, this is our territory. This is where the lawmakers live, work, eat, breathe, and sleep, and we're not going to be beholden to some state legislative branch, and I get the point on that. It's also suggested that it could violate the 23rd Amendment, which enfranchised the District of Columbia residents in presidential elections, including 3 electoral votes. It suggested the House bill would create a new, smaller district limited to the Washington Mall area, in addition to the new state, that would also get 3 electoral votes. So you got a conflict there with the 23rd Amendment. So legal challenges, certainly, but will this ultimately end the filibuster? It's a legitimate question. Will the Democrats go all the way? And will they end up regretting it? At some point, does anyone still have any hope or faith that the Republicans may at one point regain control of the House and or Senate? Notably the Senate. And if the Republicans regain control of both houses after the Democrats, this is what the Democrats set themselves up for last time. They got rid of the filibuster as it related to judges, and then Donald Trump gets elected, and lo and behold, transformed the judiciary. And nary a single Democrat will acknowledge the big, colossal Charlie Foxtrot mistake that they made when they got rid of the filibuster as to judicial nominations. Hey, look. The conservative side of the ledger came out on top on that one. And they did it for their own benefit. when they change the rules. Let's go to the phones, get a call real quick before we take a break. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show. Happy Friday Eve.
Hi, Brian. I was telling Joe, education's getting to the point now that I think I'm going to have to hang it up because I can't go along with indoctrination and this stuff that's going on. Even though I teach science, I just can't be part of a system that I totally don't believe in what they're doing, and we're not educating our young people, and I see different things that's going on. It's just passing through and keeping stupid as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yep, that is the way you create useful idiots, Dave. You deprive them of their ability to think and rationalize and make a structured, sound decisions, and you just say, look, here is the answer. It's a black and white reality, one size fits all. It's like zero tolerance policies. You know, you take all of the evaluation, the situational evaluation out of it, and you say, well, you did this, and it says right here in this booklet I'm working off of that means the following, and there's no discretion. That's school these days. My understanding is it's become a place where students are just basically taught the answers to the test that's coming up without any underlying explanation. There's no back and forth. There's no baseline understanding. You know, Dave, you sound like a lot of police officers of late. I guess he's finished. Good to hear from you, Dave. 5:16 right now.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
.520 right now at 55 KRCD Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. Care to call, make a comment, love to hear from you. This is bat crap insane. I'm staring at this right now. It should be in the stack of stupid. Okay, everybody's got police reform on their minds. Of course, the Biden administration has now launched the Minneapolis Police Department is going to be subject to a sphincter probe of federal proportions. I get the impression that this investigation, this Justice Department probe into the Minneapolis Police Department to determine whether there is any systemic problems that go on there, it's kind of what the city of Cincinnati went through 20 years ago. And the consent decree that ensued, and that's exactly what they're going to ultimately get from the Minneapolis Police Department, is a consent decree. So the federal government ultimately ends up controlling the policies and practices of a local law enforcement agency merely by launching an investigation and then getting the city to enter into a consent decree. You'll see more of that. Obama administration launched 23 of those. But anyway, over to Chicago, where you won't see a consent decree. Someone please try to make some sense of this. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot got to do a little bit of changing to the Chicago police policies, right? She's mayor. Are you ready? She's going to require police officers, this is so dumb, to get permission from a supervisor before engaging in a foot chase.
That does not make sense.
Danny, you're so right. Now, who among us has watched a movie involving a police officer? And there's always, in the movies, I know there's police officers out there who have been involved in foot chases, but, Either it's part of a comedy movie, the cop's overweight and fat and eats too much donuts and therefore can't keep up with the perp. You got Men in Black, where you have the police officer, which is who is able to run down a very fast alien out of breath. You chase after bad guys who did bad things in order to capture them. If you got to call in for a supervisor, the supervisor has no idea what's going on. You just see a guy, okay, there's a story right here next to me. There is they have video of this. A 30-some-odd-year-old woman walked up right behind her former lover, another woman who's 51, shot her execution style in the back of the head. This is in New York just the other day. Right in the middle of the street. 1 p.m., 4th Avenue in St. Mark's Place, this assassination happens. And this woman ends up turning herself into police later. Fine. You're a cop, though. You see this happen, and the perpetrator then runs away. You're going to have to call your supervisor as they make headway away from you and disappear into the crowd or wherever. You've just effectively ended the whole concept of arresting someone. Everyone will learn that all you got to do is run, because it's going to take the cop a couple of minutes to get over with his supervisor. You got a 2-minute head start. And put yourself in the position of the supervisor. Oh, if I give permission, then this ends badly, and there's an officer involved shooting because of the foot chase, then I'm going to be held accountable because I'm the one that gave the approval. Nah, don't bother. Officer, you were asking permission for a foot chase. Do you know where the perp is right now? No. While I was waiting for you to reply, he ran away. No, she said, no one should die as a result of a foot chase. That's a quote. Mayor Lightfoot, no one dies because of a foot chase. Bad guys get arrested and prosecuted sometimes as a consequence of a foot chase. You know, people do die after a foot chase. It would be the end of the foot chase because that person did something that posed a significant concern in the mind of the officer that their life might end soon. The officer's life. I have fear of grievous bodily injury or death because the guy I was chasing turned on me and had a gun. Yeah, I shot him. That's how a foot chase ends in death, but the foot chase itself, Mayor, does not. This is just crazy. And then they already had a policy. This is so funny because there's a foundation for this. They have a policy already that there's no high-speed pursuits. Police officers are not going to chase after someone who flees in a car. There's too much risk to the public in that. And one of the people quoted in the article is, we're seeing more vehicles flee from police officers because word has gotten around that they're probably not going to get permission to chase you. You have to ask for permission from your supervisor to engage in a chase in Chicago if you're a police officer. The mayor said this. This is like the icing on a cake. So we know about the automobile pursuits. They're not going to do it, so more people try to flee. Quote, I don't want people out there who are dangerous to think, well, if I just run, then I'm safe. I can continue to wreak havoc. We can't live in that world either. Close quote. How do you reconcile those? She is dead. Dumb. He's about as sharp as a bowling ball. Dumb as a box of rocks. Ted, hang on. If you don't mind, I'll take your call right after this moment of time.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios.
Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
The number, we're going to go to the phones right now because Ted held on. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. We'll get the local stories in a moment. But first, Ted, thanks for holding, and a very happy Thursday to you, sir.
Good. Happy Thursday. I would just quickly go and say that, and I think I called a little bit early, but if they're not going to give chase on foot without the supervisor's approval, same thing for a car chase or an emergency run. Got to get permission for the emergency run.
Yeah.
So what does this all lead to? Anarchy, obviously.
Yes.
Followed by welcome American Stasi.
Yeah, there's that possibility. Well, actually, Ted, I think if you're talking about federal yeah. police, right, this is the concern. But how do you get to federal police? You undermine the will of the very police that are providing local protection, looking out for their own communities and choosing a career to do that. If you make it an intolerable position, if you are constantly demonizing them and blaming them for every societal ill, you're not going to get anybody wanting to sign up for the police department, and that is happening right now. So once the numbers get sufficiently depleted, there's anarchy in the street, as you point out, Ted, based upon the rules imposed upon what remaining officers there are. People are either going to take it on their own to form militias and protect their own neighborhoods, or maybe a combination of both. Maybe that'll serve as the impetus to bring out the national federal police, which undoubtedly, Ted, will be jackbooted thugs who will be asking for your papers. And, of course, hauling you away if you are not of a certain political ideology. We've seen that before. Read your history books. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Over to local stories. Sign of the times, I guess. King's High School officials now support a decision the students made when voting for the prom king and queen. Usually a popularity contest, that, isn't it? Joe, do you get participation trophies for going to the prom if you're not elected prom king or queen? Are they doing that yet? Anyway, prom king and queen, subject of discussion because, the student body elected two women, two females as prom king and queen. That's according to one parent who was at the meeting. A couple of members of the community spoke out. One person said, hey, a man is a man, a woman is a woman, and it comes down to what your genitals are, period, end of story. That's the way we're made. The other said, hey, listen, the kids voted for two women as prom king and queen. It's their decision. Let them go. And so King said, yeah, let it go. It's the kids' decision. I certainly understand the ultimate conclusion on that, but yeah, sign of the times. Female king and queen. All right. We have a special prosecutor. Wendell Young, the subject matter. Special prosecutor is asking the Supreme Court, Ohio Supreme Court, to initiate suspension proceedings against Wendell Young after his felony indictment. You saw this one coming. Patrick Hanley yesterday said, I think so. You have an elected official who committed a felony. It's just appropriate he be suspended. So he plans to file motions with the Ohio Supreme Court either this week or next to begin the process. And under Ohio state law, Supreme Court Justice Maureen O'Connor would then appoint a panel of judges to review the evidence in the case and decide whether or not to suspend Wendell. Young hasn't announced yet if he had any plans to try to, stay with his seat or step down and let his designee select his successor. This is the problem. We've talked about this before. Wendell's got a bit of a problem on his hands. If he does just voluntarily step down, Chris Seelbach gets to name his appointment or name his successor. But if Wendell Young hangs on and then gets suspended, it's over to court where probate court Ted Winkler, Judge Ted Winkler, who's a Republican, is going to select Young's replacement, undoubtedly selecting a Republican. So there you have it. Will Wendell fall on the sword? There's your outstanding question. I got a definitive no from Joe Strecker on that, suggesting that perhaps Wendell's ego is way too big to ever step down from the seat. 535, 55 KRCD Talk Station.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Run away!
539, 55 Gear CD Talk Station. Yep, that's all you'll have to do in Chicago. Just run away. Brian Thomas here. Glad to welcome at any time to the 55 KRC Morning Show, Dan Hills, FOP President for the Cincinnati Police Department. Dan, welcome back to the program. Unexpected call, but very welcome, sir. Happy Thursday to you.
Brian, always glad to be on. I hate to think that I'm a choice between the sack of stupid and me. You know, the little inside joke going on there.
Not a choice. It's always you, my friend. Hey, real quick, before I know you want to talk about issue three, and that's very important, and we'll get to that. But I had just been mentioning Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago telling the police department that they have to get approval from their supervisor, not just for a car chase, which was a rule that already was in place, but for a foot pursuit. Dan, how would that impact local policing if your fellow officers had to call in to the lieutenant or the captain or the sergeant or whoever is in charge and above them, the supervisor, to request permission to chase after someone on foot? How would that work out?
You know, well, this goes hand in hand with the loss of implied immunity because, you know, as the department across this country are more and more tied up with concern about their own liability. You know, whenever you include a boss, like in a traffic pursuit, now you have to have a boss approve a traffic pursuit. And that's I think in the end, that's been a good thing. We have to limit traffic pursuits because they can be deadly. And I think we should only, fly around at 100 miles an hour for really, really serious things. But as far as short foot chases, dozens of those occur, I think, still on a daily basis. And some of them only last, a couple seconds. But if you have to wait for approval, right. Which might be very slow in coming because the liability, I'm going to want to know stuff. As a sergeant.
I know.
It's in other words, we're not chasing people anymore. We're not arresting people anymore.
Right.
This is complete and total surrender. It's. I don't even have the ability to imagine all the places the left is willing to go with their assault on law and order, their assault on police. I just don't even – I don't have an imagination that big. And it just gets more and more bizarre as we go.
That's right.
And I'm waiting for more and more, Democrats, moderates, independents, rhino Republicans all to stand up at once and say – wait, this is we're headed towards the end of our civilization as we know it. And I heard you talking about federal law enforcement and stuff.
Oh yeah,
so scary. Can you imagine federal law enforcement directed by the group that we now have in charge of D.C.?
Scary.
I mean, I'm scared of what's happening to our military right now.
And think about the Department of Justice and its problems already, highly politicized. They clearly prove themselves to be a political arm of the Democrat Party. And now we've got this new head of the Department of Justice is an absolute hates anything conservative or Republicans or as well seems to be an opponent of the police department as well. It's crazy where we've gone. But, yeah, federalizing police, that will be, I have the image of these jackbooted thugs walking around asking for papers and whether or not you're a member of the party, right?
I mean, you don't have to use your imagination too much. Look at the look at the feds and their search or arrest of Roger Stone, who really, you know, you could see that guy wasn't going to hurt anybody. And they went rolling in there, you know, on a search warrant like they were going after the Scarface or something of that sort. They're very politicized. And so that would be bringing that politicization, you know, away from top figures like Trump and his allies to everyday normal Americans who want to vote conservative or for, you know, God forbid somebody vote for somebody like Donald Trump again that has a independent mindset and not right. one that is set in Washington, D.C. land.
Right. All right. Dan, we'll dive on into, because I know you wanted to talk about it, issue three, which is the mandatory taking out of the general fund of the budget, $50 million adjusted for inflation as we move forward every year to deal with so-called, quote-unquote, affordable housing. We've talked about this before, Dan, but because it's so fast approaching the primary, we need to get more information out. So let us have it.
Well, you know, it's May 4th. It's mayoral primary ballot. That's why it was put on that ballot, because I believe the estimates are 15% of the people normally vote on a mayoral primary. So they're hoping to get in there with some, you know, softer, kinder, gentler language. Affordable housing. I heard Steve Goodwin talking about it the other day. Who isn't going to, you know, have a positive reaction to something that says affordable housing? But when you read between the lines, $50 million a year adjusted for inflation, Brian, for inflation. And who it goes to, you're talking about corruption at City Hall this year, or maybe your news break was talking about Wendell Young. Here you're going to be handing $50 million off to people who aren't elected, people who are running their own answers to affordable housing. And I see a whole lot of that money lining people's pockets, not going to affordable housing, but back to, you know, my favorite topic, which is law and order and the police. It's going to take huge cuts in budgets of all departments, fire and you know, maintenance of the streets and all those things. But the biggest budgetary item you have is the police department. So we're going to take a terrible hit. We're going to lose cops. We're going to lose certain units, and it's going to lead to less safe streets for visitors, less safe streets for the residents of the city of Cincinnati. So, and this is going to have a trickle effect to the other communities. So I encourage everybody, all your listeners, if you don't live in Cincinnati, speak about this issue. No on three. Speak about it to your friends and family that live in the city, acquaintances, any way you can to get the word out, because a small amount of vote is going to make a big difference when you're talking about 15, maybe because of this, you might see 20% of the electorate show up. So no on three, Brian.
No on three, and spread the word. Got to talk about it. And if you had, like you said, if you got friends that live in the city and you're not in the city, call them up and say, hey, I know you're probably not going to go to the primary. Remember, you've got a mayor to worry about, and who's going to be mayor? That's a big decision you're going to be making in terms of eliminating and whittling away the field there. But you have issues 1, 2, and 3, and you got to vote on no on three, or we're in trouble. Dan?
You know, the FOP got ahead. I'm just real quick and said we endorse David Mann. You know, we don't want to be like Chicago where that was a Monty Python clip, wasn't it? Run away.
Yeah.
We do not want We don't want the police being the ones that run away. We want the police to chase the bad guys when needed.
Yep. And, you know, it's a testament to where we are in the field of mayoral candidates when you hear Dan, you know, and the FOP backing David Mann. And he's the one that I would vote for, Dan, in these circumstances. It's kind of a strange reality, but that's where we are. Dan Hills, FOP president, thank you so much for what you do, and love from all my listeners to the Cincinnati Police Department and the hard work that they do each and every day. And anytime you want to call in, Dan, you know you're welcome on my program.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that a lot.
Take care, my friend. Stay well. 547.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights.
Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
KRC Talk Station. Happy Thursday. I got stacked of stupid stuff. We got an opportunity to maybe get one or two in anyway. Worth it to eat into some time in this segment by talking to Dan Hills about that very important no on issue three. We got a Wilkes Bar where the police engaged with Kevin Newberry, who's 20. Incident began when a woman reported her BMW was struck from behind while traveling on East Main Street. Okay, about 7:30 p.m. Woman told police she was traveling on East Main, struck from behind, as I mentioned. She said the driver of the other vehicle, Pontiac Grand Am, went around her and parked further down the street where the driver took off running. So he gets out of the car and ran away. So if this was Chicago, Mayor Lightfoot would say the cops would have to call in for permission to chase after that guy. Stand there and watch him wave. Right.
Hey, we're waiting to hear back from the lieutenant. Bye, naked guy.
He was naked. Police said the airbags in the Pontiac were deployed. Pontiac was traced to the vehicle's owner on Hancock Street, where Mr. Newberry resides. About 30 minutes after the hit-and-run crash, police received a report of a man, identified as Newberry, running naked in the area of Wilkes-Barre Boulevard. Officer encountered a naked Newberry running along Wilkes-Barre. Newberry then jumped through the passenger side window of a vehicle that had stopped to pick him up. Okay, all right then. Police conducted a traffic stop on that vehicle. Officer used, or rather said, Newberry was leaning over to the driver as he was pulled outside and arrested. Newberry was being escorted to a cruiser. Police said that he kept yelling that he was the Messiah and he was here to save us, his words. When the officer asked him location of his clothes, Newberry said that he was just reborn. Driver of the vehicle picked up Newberry near Butler Street, told the officer that he needs help. You think? Police charged him with open lewdness, false identification to law enforcement, disorderly conduct, accidents involving damage to another vehicle, failure to report an accident, and public drunkenness. The Messiah. That sums it up about right. No question. See here. Man caught half naked in girl's closet accepted a 15-year plea deal.
As is tradition.
Jeez Louise. This one from Texas. Man caught half naked with condoms in his hand in the closet of a 14-year-old girl. Sentenced earlier in the week to 15 years in prison as part of a plea agreement. Johnny Ray Shanklin, 28, confronted and detained by the girl's mom at 3 in the morning. Back in December of 2019, Wake Village police responded to the home on, and they allegedly found Shanklin nude from the waist down in the girl's closet, again with condoms in his hand. Appeared before the 5th District Judge Bill Miller, where they worked out a plea deal. He will be a ward of the state now for 15 years. 555 KRC, the talk station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Enjoy hearing from you. We have lots to talk about coming up. And, of course, at 7:05, we'll be hearing about the lawsuit that's been filed against the Ohio State Board of Education. Marxists? That's what Dan Reginald said. Stick around. We'll be back after the news.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios.
Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Science fiction is...
All systems go, Michael.
Science fact.
Just tell your smart device what to do.
Hey, Alexa, can you tune in at 55 KRC in Cincinnati?
It's coming up on 606 at 55 KRC, the talk station, Friday Eve. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to be. Got a phone number if you'd like to call. Talk about something going on in the world. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on your AT&T phone. You heard Biden seemingly taking credit for the 200 million vaccines have gone out with COVID. I think you get to take credit for that. Of course, the vaccine quickly developed under the Trump administration, so I'm going to give the vaccine manufacturers credit for creating the vaccine because, you know, regardless of who the administration is, we know the president and the cabinet aren't the ones making the recipe for the vaccine. It's a drug company. So there. But 200 million people, fine. I guess that means soon we're going to be able to take our masks off? No, the answer to that is no. More directives coming. The World Health Organization, remember we've been hearing about herd immunity? World Health Organization last year said between 60 and 70% of people getting COVID or getting a vaccine would probably suffice to have herd immunity. Now, you listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci, at any given moment, he had a different feeling or thought of as to what the threshold might be. But at least most recently, I believe in December, he said the U.S. would only reach herd immunity threshold if 90% of the population got the COVID-19 vaccine. But now they're saying that's not going to happen. Director of the Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group was interviewed. He claimed herd immunity is off the table, his words. He said, herd immunity is theoretically possible, but we as a society have rejected that. There is no eradication at this point. It's off the table. The only thing we can talk about is control. He went on to add, what has surprised me the most is the incomprehensible rejection of science, even among otherwise intelligent people. I'm truly flabbergasted to be watching this on a grand scale. So the bottom line is, the free-thinking people out in the world who are not inclined to get vaccines, for whatever reason they have, you're entitled to make up your own decisions. I get that. I do not want to live in a world where a government can force you to do something that might run afoul of, maybe your religious beliefs. Maybe you have some, you know, moral issues with it. I believe there's one wing of the Christian community that doesn't believe really in any medicine. You know, there's something to be said about that. You think, well, that's dumb. You know, I've heard about court cases where, you know, families have been ordered to bring their child in for a procedure. And if you want to believe in sort of the thing like God's will, God's plan, that kind of thing, I don't know, one could argue, and I think I'm on the side of medicine, I'm going to go see a doctor, and I want to find out if something's wrong, and I want to seek the treatment that will cure whatever is ailing me. I'm not of the mindset that you just let live and let live, or live and let die. But some people have that as a dearly held belief. If I got a disease, and that's the fate, the hand that I was dealt, that's God's will, I'm going to let it run its course, and I'm going to die. If that is a stupid position from your perspective, you're entitled to your perspective. And so is that person. You imagine a world without medicine? That's exactly the life that we would all be living. Oh, no. It's like back in the days when, she's dying of the consumption. Whatever. They had no idea what was wrong with that person. The person just died, you know. And leeches didn't help. Bloodletting didn't help. You just died. So back to the vaccine. A lot of people out there don't want to take it. And what bothers me about this conclusion is that they'll use this conclusion that, you know, we will never have herd immunity because so many people won't get the vaccine. It's going to continue to float around there, this COVID-19. Well, you got nothing to worry about if you had the vaccine, right? It'd only be the unwashed and, in your mind, maybe stupid people who won't get the vaccine that are going to struggle and suffer. That's their right, isn't it? But I have a feeling this point that's being made, this is an acknowledgement, in essence, by the World Health Organization that, yeah, we do have freedoms and liberties in this country, unlike fascist regimes. And that because we have freedom and liberties, we're going to have people that are going to choose not to use the vaccine. And therefore, what's coming, we, your lords and masters, have decreed that you will, from henceforward, have to wear a mask. And you'd be asking yourself, well, wait a second. Why? Why? Because the argument has always been, well, you're protecting your fellow man or woman, as the case may be, or whatever. Your fellow human beings. By you wearing a mask, you're going to prevent your, perhaps, exposure to COVID-19 to getting on them. Well, are they deserving of that level of protection if they refuse to get the vaccine that will provide them with the protection from the disease? Have we not now been able to move past the point where they can rely on that argument? You're protecting your fellow man by forcing us to wear a mask. Well, wait a second. My fellow man is capable of staying away and avoiding the disease completely by getting a vaccine. Or at least, percentage-wise, largely immune from it. So I think we can suspend with that, and maybe let's just argue, all agree, that we can just suspend with the masks. And I know you've done this, and I've done this so many times that if I had a dollar, you know, it's one of those things. You get out of your car, you get all the way to the door you're getting ready to walk into, the, you know, convenience store, the gas station, the grocery store, and you're like, ah, geez. And you go back to your car and you pull the mask out that you forgot to bring with you as you approach the store. Ah, if I had a dollar for every time. I go out and buy Joe Strecker some big lunch. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on your AT&T phones. We have a lot of doxing going on in this world, and I don't know if you've been following this incident in Columbus the other day. And they thankfully, and you know, anybody out there who doesn't like police having to wear body cameras, this is the kind of thing that the police have to embrace the concept of body cameras. Yeah, it's a pain. You got rules related to it. Yes, you know, it's expensive, but it is a real lifesaver in terms of the public narrative, the narrative about any officer involved shooting or altercation. It avoids so many internal affairs complaints because people out in the world will say, I was a victim of police brutality, and that cop violated my civil rights. And it became a he said, she said kind of reality. With the body camera footage, we now have hard evidence. Sometimes it finds the police at fault, George Floyd. Sometimes it exonerates the police in most every case. You got this case in Columbus. We got two teenagers in a knife fight. Well, one of them's got a knife. Anyway, getting ready to stab this other girl in the head. And the police officer shoot her. It's all documented, thank God. So there is still, and nonetheless, all this criticism heaped down on the Columbus Police Department. Didn't they save a life? They took a life, yes, but they took a life of a person who was getting ready to deprive another black girl of her own life. It seems to me a situation where someone's going to die, and shouldn't it be the person who wanted to kill rather than the innocent victim with a knife in her head? But body camera footage to the rescue. So you had the false narrative being pulled out by the media right off the bat. Alleged knife fight. One of the victims allegedly had a knife. Was perhaps wielding a knife. There's no alleged here. There's video footage of it. It's right in front of your face. The cops saved someone's life, and yet they're being condemned and ridiculed for it, and across the board too. It's embarrassing because you'd expect the Democrats are the peddlers of the anti-police myth in that particular illustration to maybe backpedal a little bit after they realize that the truth is out. No, they're just doubling down on it. micromanaging and with 2020 hindsight, the actions of the police officers. It's got to be a wonderful life being a police officer these days. You know what I'm saying? Got time, Joe? Got time. Let's take Larry real quick here. Hey, Larry, thanks for calling this morning, and a very happy Thursday to you.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Happy Thursday to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to actually, you know, go right off what you're saying here. I was ready to send an email to Tucker Carlson last night to cover this story a little bit. And then actually Sean Hannity talked about it right off the bat. But at the same time, I think it was a day before the situation in Columbus where the 15-year-old girl, got shot. About to stab another what looked like young female. The day before that in Cincinnati, one 13-year-old girl stabbed to death another 13-year-old girl, and there was no police officer present there.
Yeah, that's
just
awful.
It just makes you think if you put those stories side to side and you talk about, you know, there's a lot of things to talk about there. One, you know, why does the media only focus on one story and not the other? And then also, if you think about preferably, I know it's terrible what happened in Columbus, but I think the family and community would also prefer that police be there in situations to protect people, in the Cincinnati situation as well. The other thing I wanted to bring up was just when it comes to teaching critical race theory, and I can't remember the gentleman's name that you are going to have on later, but I was listening this morning when I think it was David was talking about it. It seems like it's tough to stick in the education field right now.
Yes.
I am an educator myself, and the way that I'm looking at it, if Ohio does, go ahead and go on the woke train, and they're going to force, critical race theory into the classroom and things like that, I'm not a fan of that. And I think that, right now I don't include any, I don't talk about it even in current events and things like that, because I just don't want to put myself in a situation where, I have to skate around things. But if it gets put in front of me,
see?
Something that I'm going to be forced to teach, I look at it basically as kind of like when you're coaching a sport and you're, having to prepare your team for the other team's offense or defense. I'm just going to use it and ask other educators to use it as a way to, basically just highlight how terrible of an idea it is, right?
Yeah,
if you're going to have to teach it, if you're going to have to put it in your classroom, that's fine. Just, be able to point out, use it as a way to point out how ridiculous of a theory, we're getting from the leftists here in our country. So, don't bow out of the fight, but, use it. Just to make the point that what we've been teaching for centuries in our country about how amazing our country is, do that instead.
Indeed, and I appreciate your thoughts and observations on it. I was a little disheartened to hear Dave, who is a teacher, who's been calling on the program a lot, suggest that he's going to just quit. He is done. He cannot deal with the woke reality that is mandated in the classroom these days. Yeah, we're going to be diving into that subject matter with Dan Reginald at 7:05 because he is the plaintiff in a lawsuit against the Ohio State Board of Education for, violating their own rules and incorporating into the curriculum this critical race theory and 1619 project stuff. So thanks, Larry, for your interest in that, and Dan will elaborate on it coming up at the top of the next hour. 6:18 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Or just hit #550 if you have an AT&T phone. Time for me to mention my favorite folks over Foreign Exchange for repairing automobiles. Yeah, they are the ones to go to because it's cheaper than a dealer. Yeah, you go back to where you got the car at the dealership. They're going to charge you an arm and a leg to get whatever it is you need to have fixed. How about the mechanic ability at Foreign Exchange? Absolutely. They're ace mechanics, master technicians, factory trained, ASC certified. So there's no sacrifice there. You do get a full warranty on parts and service. And I mentioned many times over the years that I had my now dead car. Oil changes at Foreign Exchange. It was under warranty until that person killed it. It was under warranty. And so if you have a car that is getting ready to go out of warranty, you want to get as much covered under the warranty as
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality.
The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
It is 6:23 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Going to go over the phones. Got Scott on the phone with a comment. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling, and happy Thursday.
Good morning, Brian. I'm listening to all the comments and opinions on the vaccinations and everything, and knowing how extremely hard hit you were hit by this virus, and my semi-knowledge, I guess, of the litany of cases that I'm aware of, I'm guessing yours was probably on the extreme hard side.
Yeah, they call it a long COVID because it lasted about 6 weeks for me.
Right, right. So I understand more so your view on the vaccinations and such, and if I misunderstand, please correct me, but my whole take on the vaccinations, at this point anyway, I see the whole pandemic level of this virus as being a politically expedient concoction.
Sure.
That I don't, you know, the numbers, the sheer amount of numbers, I don't believe it and wouldn't believe it for a second. For one thing, you know, it's the government and they're here to help. And I don't buy into all of it.
Well, I understand that. That is one of the motivations people have to either take or not take the vaccine. Some people think this is a big political exercise. I mean, COVID-19 is real. I can vouch for it. As you pointed out, I had a bad case. So
no doubt.
I won't deny the existence. I'm not even going to suggest that the vaccine is a bad or dangerous thing. I'm like, I call myself Switzerland sometimes. I'm trying to be neutral and take a 10,000-foot approach. I appreciate the freedoms and liberties this country has. I embrace them, and therefore I embrace your conclusions, at least insofar as you've decided that this is nonsensical, it's trumped up, it's out of control, it's outrage, whatever. Or that you think the vaccine's dangerous, it hasn't been tested long enough. There are a whole lot of reasons why
exactly.
You might not want to do that. That's what
and
my point was.
Tell.
That was my point. But this whole idea, this, you know, top-down edicts, mandates, you know, social distancing and spacing should become, regardless of whether or not we get, herd immunity, which they think we need, everyone now has the option to get a preventative. You can get the vaccine. It's there. And it has been proven to be effective in like 90% of the cases. And I have no doubt on that science. Some people have an adverse reaction to it. You factor that in the equation. It's the same thing with a flu vaccine, any vaccine.
Right.
So you make your own mind up. I'm going to roll the cosmic dice and go without, or I'm going to get the vaccine and know that in most cases, I'm going to then be immune from COVID-19. But because we have that choice now, there's no reason for a mask mandate after the shot has been available for all to get if they want it. Because the product,
well, I see that mask is that to me, that mask is nothing but a political bridle and bit to it's an exercise in determining who is going to buckle down and do as they're told and who's going to stand up and offer opposition, because for as effective as that mask is, particularly in the many different ways it is misused and misworn, we've said this before, people with full beards walking around.
Yeah,
I think you could draw that mask on your face with a Sharpie and satisfy the masses as ridiculously ineffective as that would actually be.
Well, and see, then there's that argument as well, that whether or not it is even effective. But the government has businesses by the short and curlies, if I may be so bold, because they can get through them through health regulations that govern health standards for like food preparation and you know, stores, and they all have rules and regulations. They can't make you wear one, but if the store owner says you have to wear one to get into their private property, then of course they're free to do that and free to expel you from the store if you don't wear one. You can obviously go elsewhere, but you know, it really is the bravest among us are the store owners that stand up and just say, you know what, I'm not putting a mask mandate sign on my front door. You come in and out as you please. And I've seen a lot of stores go that route. So if we had more of that.
It has proven to be very profitable to a lot of different people, and it has also proven to be a very useful tool in the toolbox of those who wish to destroy an economy and ultimately a country, as I believe we'll find out at some point. I hope not.
Well, the predicate for my comments really is the availability of a vaccine which prevents you from getting COVID should end this argument that we are wearing masks to protect our fellow man. And if you don't wear one, you're being selfish. Well, no. The person who doesn't get the vaccine is the only person out there that's going to get COVID if the vaccine is available. So take the selfishness out of it and let them roll their cosmic dice and get it or not. Ted Nugent just got it, and he even denied its existence. So there you have it. Got to run, Scott. Appreciate the call, though, and the discussion. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Bud Herbert Motors. I sure appreciate Bud Herbert Motors saving me from the box store experience, or at least showing me how much better.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
It's 6:33, coming up on 6:34, 55KRCD Talk Station. Went long with the last caller. That's okay. Your calls are welcome. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Got time for and a couple of headlines, local stories. The Ohio House passed the income tax cut and did a school funding overhaul yesterday. They passed the 2% income tax and a nearly $2 billion, with a B, school funding overhaul for the two-year state budget. It passed, 70-27. It's a $74.7 billion budget. So lots of money and some change coming that way in terms of school funding. Some say the tax cut is illegal because the COVID-19 money that's coming into Ohio. Hey, how about that for manipulation? You can't use the federal money to lower taxes and give people back the money that we're giving you to deal with COVID, even though we got it from them in the first place. It's crazy. That's your federal government at work, though. And can you imagine if they successfully argue in court, if someone challenges this and says, Ohio, you cannot lower your income tax by 2%. See, that would make us more competitive in the grand scheme of things. You understand we are competing with the 50 other states as well as any other country in the world that provides an adequate infrastructure to run your business. If their taxes are lower, like Ireland, for example, you may want to go there. Yeah, we've seen this a lot of late, haven't we, with COVID? People leave in New York. There's nothing to do here anymore. I want out, and besides, they're taking, well, basically all my money from me in the form of taxation. So Ohio lowers its. It's now more competitive than New York. Businesses might want to relocate here. That's bad, you know, because if you look at it, the U.S. government is endeavoring, along with the U.N., for example, to flatten out all the income taxes taken around the globe. They don't want competition globally. They don't want businesses packing up and moving. It's kind of odd, isn't it? We've kind of become hostages. And speaking of the COVID problem and the gentleman, the last caller, pointing out that, you know, he believes this is an effort by government to manipulate and force us into submission, et cetera. We've all heard the arguments. I saw there was a ban the other day, I think on 80 countries, they were proposing no travel bans. You know what made me think of? The Berlin Wall. Yeah, was designed to keep people in a city that they wanted to flee. You can't get out of the United States if they have a travel ban now, can you? That's a form of wall. 636 right now. 55 Care CD Talks. Coming up on 642, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Hope you're having a wonderful Friday Eve. Looking forward to Dan Reganor and his lawsuit. He is the name plaintiff in a lawsuit he brought against the Ohio State Board of Education. It is one giant declaration of shenanigans, and I can only hope that Dan wins, prevails. They prevented anybody from commenting on the incorporation of into the Ohio education program and what your children are learning. Any public comment relating to this critical race theory and 1619 project that they've now incorporated. And so they violated their own rules by refusing to allow anybody to comment on that. It was just like this one subject matter, basically. Actually, there were two subject matters, but why? Were they afraid? Yes. You got Dan Reginald getting into them with a very, very important lawsuit. Get the details on that coming up after the top of the hour news. Got other guests lined up as well. But on the heels of that earlier mask conversation, and let me just qualify this by saying the only reason I'm bringing this up is just to illustrate some additional hypocrisy and lunacy and stupidity relating to mask mandates. We all know we can find them. There are just irreconcilable positions that government officials take. Like, for example, you remember the early on where you could go to Home Depot for some things, but they wouldn't let you buy things that were in the same aisle. Like, what in the hell is that? And how is that going to prevent you from getting COVID, right? All right, so we've got them out in California. Now, I hate the Oscars. That's the qualification. You couldn't pay me to watch the Oscars. It is one giant circular pleasure fest, if you know where I'm driving at on that comment. Batting themselves on the back. Yeah, exactly, Joe. Although there was a band named after what I'm referring to. Punk band. That's all it is. It's a popularity contest among the beautiful people. Whatever. But with that background, California has COVID mask mandates, right? Of course they do. COVID mandates, as far as masks are concerned, are not required when people are on camera for TV or film productions, okay? And I understand why maybe there's a qualification there, because you can't go film an episode when everybody's got masks on. It's just not, doesn't make good for good TV or movies, right? It may be indicative of the times, but we're going to give the actors a pass on wearing masks when they're filming. Now, what about the Oscars? Well, they have decided that this TV event is, in fact, a TV production, and therefore, the celebrities will not have to wear masks when they are on screen. Okay. Next question. Do they have to wear masks when the TV cameras are not rolling? Commercial break kind of thing? The answer is yes, they do. Because the TV is no longer rolling, it is no longer a TV production, the mask must go back on. And that nets everyone involved in the Oscars, as it always does every year, regardless of the stupidity, the bubbling bong of stupidity. Don't watch them. Just don't watch them. 645, 55 KMCD Talk Station. What? And ask yourself why you watched them in the first place.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood.
For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Right now, 6:50 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Dan Reagan will come up at the top of the hour news, suing the Ohio Department of Education and a lot of the board members for, violating their own rules and not allowing for public comment with regard to the changes they're making to Ohio's curriculum, which will include now your children being indoctrinated in learning to be self-loathing. That is, if you're white, you need to learn to loathe yourself and hate your country. You yourself are personally responsible for the burden of racism, because there are racists in the world. We all know that. But because there are, but only white racists now, of the mindset, I suppose, that there can't be any other race but white hatred of people of color. That seems to be the only focus. I disagree with that conclusion, but yeah, it's the idea that your children are going to be the subject or focus of this scrutiny. And in fact, the educators themselves have to disclose their privilege. At least that's a directive that's incorporated into this this lawsuit and the decree that came down from the Ohio Board of Education. We'll get the details from Dan after the top of the hour news. It's frightening stuff, what's going on out there. And back to earlier in the program, we got an unexpected but very welcome call from Dan Hills, the FOP president, and he really, really, really cannot emphasize enough that we need to get a no on issue 3. And this is not a no on affordable housing or the concept of affordable housing being available. It's just no to the stupid idea of taking $50 million every year, adjusted for inflation, right out of the budget, right off the top. Can't touch it. That money must go to affordable housing. Now, I talk all the time about the lists. Everybody's got a list of what they want accomplished, whether you're Republican or Democrat. You know, here it is. These are my pet projects. These are what I want done. These are the things I think should be a priority. That's what elected officials do. Now, you're being put in the position of an elected official by being able to vote on a budget item, a substantial one, and this is never going to go away. $50 million. You have chosen to start with $50 million going to affordable housing. Now, that comes at a cost. The cost is to the other previously identified as priorities. And now I think Cranley laid them out. The Enquirer reported on it. But this is what will happen if you vote yes. You're the elected official, and you're going to decide on a budget item that's going to impact the entire budget. $12.1 million cuts to leveraged support. Now, you know what that is? That's the Summer Youth Jobs Program. They're saying they'd have to take $250,000 out of that. And the Center for Closing the Health Gap, the one that's supposed to provide additional money and services and goods for those folks who are living on life's margins insofar as health care is concerned, $750,000 is going to be cut from Center for Closing the Health Gap. Department of Economic Inclusion and the Department of Aging and Accessibility is going to get a $4.5 million cut. And we go to the police department, which, of course, is the focus of Dan Hill's comments and concerns. You know, we're already short on police. It would be a $13.8 million cut to the police department, including cutting 75 current officers and canceling the upcoming 50-member recruit class. This is at a time where the world, or at least the United States, is now struggling to get good, decent, honest people to pursue what used to be considered a good, decent, honest profession, and that's serving the community as law enforcement. The numbers are way down on the people interested, and I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anybody who's been paying attention for the last year and a half or longer. It's a tough job, and apparently it's a thankless position. You're spit on, they hate you, believe you're systemically racist. There's your job. Now, I think I'm going to go with another career. 75 current officers and canceling the 50-member recruit class that's upcoming at a time we need more officers and not less. Also cut, $6.25 million from the fire department. It'll be brownouts that'll deal with that. Rolling brownouts at three engine companies, which result, of course, in slower response times. And then we also have $4 million, and this to me is you can put aside politics And I think there's a true bipartisan belief that trash pickup is critical to a community. Have you seen a city where the trash collection has been suspended because of a strike or because of some other problem? It piles up in no time. It invites rat infestation, disease. It just looks god-awful. Yeah, well, trash collection is going to be cut by $4 million, resulting in probably biweekly pickup as opposed to weekly, and the layoff of about 40 employees. Those are just the tip of the iceberg, folks. So since you're now going to be in the position of elected official and you're going to make the budget choice, you better remember your choices will have repercussions. And that is a little glimpse of the repercussions of a yes vote on issue 3. Stick around. Dan Reagan will give it to the Ohio Board of Education, and thank God for people like Dan. He's a plaintiff in a recently filed lawsuit. We're going to hear from him on that subject. We'll also hear from Tom Clavin with a new book, and it's a heck of a good book. Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone, and the Fight for America's First Frontier. That's in the next hour. I hope you can stick around.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Just when the times couldn't get any crazier, along comes another story to add to the chaos.
Here we go again.
On 55 KRC.
This is their job every day.
The talk station.
Hey, 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a decent Friday Eve. Glad you're tuning in right now. If you have been listening all morning, you heard some good conversations, some good calls, and, of course, comments from Dan Hills of the FOP on that issue 3. Now we get Dan Reginald back, not to talk about Empower You or the Fill the Truck campaign. Dan, of course, is responsible for both of those and wonderful things they both are. Also, he is the owner of Frame USA, 225 Northland Boulevard, where you'll find the Empower You studios. And Dan, welcome back. And I bring this up and emphasize Empower You, not because that's what you want to talk about today, but I had a real nice conversation yesterday with Tom DeWeese, who's doing that speech tonight on the wrenching transformation of America and all the efforts the left is using to completely reorganize human society. He's going to talk about that, how they're doing it, their tactics, and how you can live a freer life and ways to fight back. And that is an important one. So I just want to remind my listeners, just go to empoweryouohio.org, or you can go to the Empower You studios at 225 Northland Boulevard and watch it live. Either log in or watch it live. That's tonight, and it starts at 7:05. Dan, welcome back to the program, my friend. Plaintiff Dan Reginald.
Yeah, this is the first time in my life. So listen, about issue 3, I just have to say real quick, Brian, my father used to tell me that $50 million here, $50 million there, soon it adds up to be real money.
Isn't that the truth, Dan? That's just such a dangerous thing. So Well, I guess people will learn the lesson. If this goes through and it is disastrous, as I believe it will be when it goes through with all those cuts, I believe there will be a subsequent ballot initiative to change people's minds and pull that back. But vote no on it, and it'll never happen. We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the nice things about running Empower You that I love is that people from all around the state send me little notes about things they think are important. And it was in January when somebody from Lorain, Ohio, sent me a note and said, hey, you need to look at something the state school board passed last July, right in the middle of COVID. And it was something called the Resolution to Condemn Racism and Advance Equity. And I started drilling down in this, and I just couldn't believe what was in it. It was scarily similar to something Hamilton County passed after Todd Portune died. They're almost identical documents. And what it really is, it's just in my mind, as I started to read it, it talks about indoctrination of employees. It talks about how we all have internal bias, and we all have to look at our implicit racism that we have. And, you know, nobody ever talks about looking at individuals' hearts. And when I read the thing, it reached out to me. This is critical race theory coming to Ohio.
Yeah.
So I went on the state board's website, and I found links to this 1619 project, which has been totally disavowed as false by really just about everybody. And there were lesson plans that had been put on the state board of education site by this person named Nicole Hannah Jones. And what the lesson plans talked about was that really democracy has been born on the backs of blacks, and that black people have seen the worst of all America, and it was really anti-American stuff. So I got a hold of this president of the state board of education. Her name is Laura Kohler, and also the superintendent. His name is Paula DeMaria, and Laura did talk to me. So I want to thank her for that. But as I got into the conversation with her, I said, I need you to take this 1619 project stuff off your website because it's not factual. And at first she told me, well, I don't even know how it got up there. So I guess that told me something. And
yes.
Then she refused to do it. So I felt like I needed to let the governor know that I felt like the board had been radicalized. That was just my sense. So I wrote him a letter and told him that. I said, I think the board's been radicalized. You need to do something about it. So April, their meeting in April approached April 13th, and I contacted the superintendent and said, I would like to provide testimony at your April 13th meeting. And they had a mechanism to do that. It was a Zoom meeting. And she said, well, what do you want to talk about? And I said, I want to talk about critical race theory. And she said, well, I've made a decision that this public body is not going to accept public testimony on anything that's race-related.
Okay. And as your complaint for declaratory judgment and preliminary injunctive and permanent injunctive relief explains, they have a set of rules, and their rules allow for you, Dan, or
yeah,
others to make public comment. So did they vote on a rule change somewhere along the line, Dan, that you weren't made aware of, or did this woman just arbitrarily say, no, we're not going to talk about critical race theory?
She claimed that it was in her purvey to be able to, in her rules of her policy manual, to be able to do whatever she wanted on public comments. So it enraged me. You know, we've all been looking a lot at the First Amendment with everything that's been going on.
Sure.
And you know, Brian, we've taught at Empower You, we've taught the Open Meetings and Open Records Act probably 10 or 12 times. And I've always just learned that a public body can't just shut down speech if somebody's critical of something that they're doing. It's crazy. And so I got a hold of just two incredible great friends to the public, Kurt Hartman and Chris Finney, and I said,
yeah,
this is what's happened. Can you help me? And Kurt really educated me. You know, he's a former judge. He's just such a wise person. And really, he explained something that I guess in my history I didn't really tie together. Just how this whole critical race theory is such a Marxist ideology. Just because its total goal is to pit one class of people against another.
That's what it's all about, Dan. Class.
And
class
and
struggle.
So, Kurt filed the lawsuit, and I think it's telling a couple comments in the lawsuit that really that really are interesting. First, Kurt argued that it wasn't even legal for them to – it wasn't even a part of their job duties that they could have this resolution. But just to show you the mindset on these people that I called radicalized, I'll read you a couple comments, a couple of these state board of the Board of Education. One of the people on the state board said, well, listen, I don't want to accept any testimony on race because then the Ohio Board of Education would no longer be my safe space.
What?
Put that in your whatever and smoke it.
Be kidding me.
And the same board member came out and said, listen, I'm using race and I don't feel ashamed about that.
Okay.
So this critical race theory, my reason for getting involved in it is, well, first, the First Amendment thing. Thank you, Kurt Hartman and Chris Finney. But it's being thrown on people so fast. And for people who don't know about it out there, my number one goal is to let you know it's coming. And if you don't know about it, you can go to empoweruohio.org. There's the first tab on the website is a critical race theory tab. And by now there's probably 40 links to articles that people have sent me that talk about what it is, what they're trying to do. And the most shocking thing to me about the whole thing, Brian – oh, by the way, I want to let everybody know that the only reason the resolution passed, the original resolution that the state board passed, was because of the appointees from Governor DeWine and Governor Kasich. If the elected people had voted just for this, it wouldn't have passed. And that's why I went to the governor. But the big thing about this whole critical race theory that's shocking to me is that we've all embraced, I think, over the years, Dr. King's teachings.
Content of character, not color of skin?
Yeah, they want to kick him out to the road. They just want to say, later, dude.
He's an impediment.
And what they want to do is say, hey, we're smart enough to manage outcomes of every little person out there in the world. And this is from people who can't even, you know, they can't sometimes fix our potholes and everything else we want government to do.
Yeah, and the other component of this, Dan, and you know it, if this is adopted and it's incorporated into the education system, that is one more. It's like that list I talked about earlier, you know, with issue three. You know, every politician has a list, but they're defined by the budget. They're limited by the budget. There's a finite amount of hours in a classroom. And if you are going to take time away from subject matters that will actually result in your improved education and employment at some future point, reading, learning the English language, mathematics, right? Concrete sciences, these things. You're going to have to push some amount of time away from that in order to dwell on social issues like this that people have different ideologies and philosophies about. The board that you're talking about, the Ohio State Board of Education, has in their resolution suggested that we all are part of a systemic white supremacy culture. I mean, that's the position they're taking.
Maybe I've got a simplistic view of the world, Brian, but what happened to reading, writing, arithmetic?
It's being pushed by the wayside to dumb down our children and make them all self-loathing little, people who need safe spaces, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, listen, so I wanted to let everybody know out there that there will be an individual component to this, a group of about 20, I'm calling them the dream team, 20 people around the entire state have got together and are working super hard on this to kind of really hit it hard. And at some point, we will come to people and say, we need your help here. And so just parents that are out there, don't accept it. Fight back. You'll be amazed how quickly people will help you and jump into your cause to stop this.
Well, I had an educator who's been a longtime listener and caller call me this morning, science teacher, and he said he's given up. It's like a police officer who can't take the abuse from the populace anymore, just packing it up and moving on. And he said it's this type of teaching, this critical race theory, 1619 kind of stuff, this woke crap that the children are not learning to think for themselves or create, you know, come up with individual ideas and conclusions and thoughts based upon rational thinking. They're all just a bunch of lifeless, you know, being told what to do, poor kids. And he can't deal with it anymore. It was heartbreaking to hear him say that, Dan, because, you know, you don't want someone like that to capitulate.
Yeah, it was hard to hear that. And you know, like I said, I've never filed a lawsuit in my life, so I was a little nervous about doing this. But Kurt Hartman told me that he said, listen, I'm just sure that the First Amendment will be vindicated here, and that's what I'm I think we all need to hang our hats on. And even one of the Board of Education members, a guy by the name of John Hagan, the lawsuit starts off with a quote from him, and he said, "I don't know why you've put a filter on the public forum here and shut down any discussion about race, and I'm not sure why you've put a filter on this, why would any group of people decide not to listen to what the public has to say?"
Well, because they can't answer the questions, Dan. Once you point out that it's lies, it's wrong, it's insulting, it's not doing the children any good, they get a deer in the headlights look at you. It's the reason that college campuses don't allow conservative thought and speakers on, because, oh my God, we're going to be put to the test. We're going to have to answer tough questions. We have to acknowledge that 2 + 2 is, in fact, 4, not what you feel like the number should be. That's the problem. They can't deal with criticism and analysis. It doesn't.
And hopefully we can take on the universities, every single university in Ohio that's state-owned and has taken this on. And I think Ohio State's in the middle of hiring 50 different diversity officers.
Oh, wow.
And I wonder how many of the 50 they're going to put on critical race theory. These are our kids out there, and we've got to stop this.
We do. They just cower in the face of having a finger pointed at them, even if that finger is pointing at them for all the wrong reasons and is misguided. It's sad. Dan Ragonal, God bless you and what you do. Thank you for being the plaintiff in this very important suit. It's for injunctive and declaratory relief. When are you going to be in court first?
I don't know the exact date. And anybody who wants to read the suit, if you go to that critical race theory tab on empowertheohio.org, there's a link to the lawsuit. You can read it. But all I can tell you is, Brian, when we find out, I'll keep you in the loop. And I appreciate you letting people know about this. The Enquirer sure won't talk about it, nor will any newspaper in the state of Ohio as of right now.
Seriously?
So you get where this is all going.
That is scary. So the press is taking on the same attitude as the Ohio State Board of Education's taking. No, we just won't talk about it. La 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 la.
Wow,
Dan Ragonal. Well, you got this for him. Give us updates. Let us know, and the best of luck. And thanks to the Finney Law Firm for taking on cases like this. They do it all the time, and they're really, really great at what they do. So,
thank goodness to them.
Kurt Hartman, thanks for
having me on, and have a great day today.
Thank you for all you do, Dan. We'll look forward to having you back on the program soon. It is 7:23 at 55 KRC, the Talk Station. And a happy Thursday. Got Tom Clavin's got a new book out. He's a prolific author and a very well-respected one. This one is a fantastic book. Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. It's gotten rave reviews and a fascinating look at, a detailed look at who he was. Who's Daniel Boone and what did he do, and how did he influence his life, and how did he view himself versus the sort of legend that surrounds him? We'll also hear from Jack Carr, a former Navy SEAL. He's got a new book, Devil's Hand. He's going to be on at 8:05 to discuss that. Certainly going to be fascinating. And finally, we'll hear from Jay Ratliff about aviation issues coming up at 8:30. We hear from him every Thursday on aviation. Today it'll be airline industry increasing the loss estimates for this year, international travels down, and question about whether it's going to remain that way. We'll get our hub delay update as well. Jay, good man, and always an interesting conversation. Tomorrow, of course, Tech Friday, Ron Wilson and the Enquirer's Jason Williams joining the program. Today's big day in Washington, D.C., and it comes with a demand that the Senate change the rules, of course, get rid of the filibuster. D.C. statehood, they're going to have a vote today. And most assuredly, the Democrats, because they have a majority of the House, are going to pass this. Many, I talked about this earlier in the program, believe it to be unconstitutional, so it will be subject to legal challenges if it passes the Senate. But given the makeup of the Senate, given the fact this is a piece of legislation, it's going to have a filibuster-proof majority. Because Republicans are not going to abide on this. This is really a power grab by the Democrats to get a couple extra Democrat senators because they can't find a conservative in D.C. and also give them an extra House of Representative member. So that's the point of all of this. There are ways around it. There are ways to give the residents of the area, the 700,000 residents of the District of Columbia, the ability to vote. You just whittle away the size of the district like they did in 1846. You know, Alexandria and Arlington, Virginia, used to be part of the capital. I guess, geographically speaking, it was given back to Virginia. And you can give the vast majority of Washington, D.C. back and just call Washington, D.C. the buildings that comprise government. So you can work there, and while you're in that building working, you're working in the District of Columbia. But when you walk outside of that building and you end up landing on a street or something, you are in, well, Virginia or Maryland, depending on where they do the slicing. That's an easy fix. It gives every single person a vote and saying who the how the Congress is made up. Don't have to add additional states. We don't have to violate the terms and conditions of the United States Constitution. Specifically, the establishment and the purpose of it being an independent, non-state district, and also the 23rd Amendment, which enfranchised residents in presidential elections, kind of complicates that one. So that'll be voted on today. Coming up next, got Rush Limbaugh, the late, the great. We always have his comments, and they always are best of fun. Seven 30, happy Friday Eve. Brian Thomas here in front of a bunch of local stories. Happy to dive on into those before we get to the author about the Daniel Boone book. Again, should be absolutely fascinating. Blood and Treasure, that's next. Jack Carr, top of the hour, Devil's Hand. He's a former SEAL. And Jay Ratliff, 1 hour from now with an aviation update. Always enjoy talking to Jay. Anyway, what's going on locally? Wendell Young's in hot water. And, of course, we all know he's subject to an indictment. Now they are looking to get him suspended. We had a special prosecutor named Patrick Hanley. He said yesterday morning, you have an elected official who committed a felony. It's just appropriate that he be suspended. So he said he plans to file motions with the Ohio Supreme Court either this week or next week to begin the process of having Wendell Young suspended. According to state law, the Ohio Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, I should add, Maureen O'Connor, appoints a panel of judges to review the evidence that they have against Wendell Young and then decide whether he should be suspended. Young hasn't announced any plans on what he's planning on doing. If he does resign, at least he gets Chris Seelbach, his designee, to select his replacement, which will obviously ensure that it's a Democrat. If Wendell Young does not resign and tries to stick it out and ends up getting suspended as a consequence of this action, then, oh, yes, we go back over to Judge Winkler, Republican, who filled the last two open seats with Steve Gooden and Liz Keating. Yeah, slightly more conservative than your average city council member. So that might ensure at least a decent, logical, reasonable, money-conscious, sound decision-making group of folks. So Wendell, stick it out. We'll see if this special prosecutor is successful in getting him suspended. What else we got going? This could have been in the stack of stupid, I guess. Warren County couple found themselves in a legal dispute. They have a pot-bellied pig, and they want to keep it as a pet. Well, a judge ruled yesterday that, yep, they can do that. Arnold is his name. Highly original, that. Green Acres, if you recall. Belongs to Richard and Catherine Price, who reside in the Country Brook subdivision near Springboro. Catherine Price, born in Vietnam, moved to the United States when she was six. One of the hardest things to leave behind, she said, was her childhood pet pig. So as an adult, she wanted a Vietnamese pot-bellied pig. However, earlier in the year, the County Brook Homeowners Association filed a civil suit against the couple for keeping a pet pig and asked for a temporary restraining order and the removal of Arnold. So they got Arnold in 2018. The pig's been living at their home ever since. Price filed a lawsuit alleging discrimination because of Catherine's Vietnamese heritage. Family attached news articles from Asia depicting pigs as pets. And they also note that homeowner association rules do permit dogs, cats, and other domestic household pets. And it finally reached a conclusion yesterday. A court ruled Arnold is a domesticated animal that is regularly kept and fed by members of the household inside the house and is in every way treated as a companion animal as opposed to livestock or utility animal. That's a win for Richard and Catherine Price. And I guess it's probably a win for Arnold, because what do you do with a full-grown pot-bellied pig domesticated? Is there a potbelly pig rescue out there? I bet there is. Ohio Senate, they at least advance a bill to put party affiliation on folks, judicial candidates. Now, right, you know that judicial candidates don't run under a party affiliation, although parties do endorse certain judges and reject others. Ohio Senate passed the bill. It's Senate Bill 80. The vote 24-9 passed yesterday afternoon along party lines. Needs approval of the Ohio House, of course, going to Governor DeWine for signature. They run in partisan primaries, but in nonpartisan general elections. So Ohio's the only state with this kind of system. And the judges have to follow a whole bunch of campaign rules that limit their partisan activity. So this is an effort to transform the system. Let's learn a little. Let's learn a lot. If you read the book, you'll certainly learn a lot about Daniel Boone. Myth, there's a lot of them out there. Reality, we're going to find out about reality with our author guest next segment, Tom Clavin, the book Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. Hope you can stick around for that. Should be great. Odor Exit. Buy Odor Exit. It's great. It's a great product because it gets rid of stinky stuff. Not politics. I always like to qualify that. But beyond that, everything you can throw at it, pretty much. Just go to Odor Exit's website and try to find an odor there that you've got, and I'm sure you will. Mold, mildew, pet odor, human odor. Feel free to use your imagination when I'm talking about these odors. And my favorite use of Odor Exit, because it's a regular use of Odor Exit, anytime I pick up fast food, I use it to clean my car odor out. I hate that smell of lingering fast food. Although I eat the food, I don't want it lingering in my car. So I got Odor Exit Magic in my glove box. Works on smoke. I think about cigar smoke. They got a great product to get rid of the lingering and lasting smoke odor as well. Go to Odor Exit, ODORXIT, no E. Find the .739, 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a happy Friday Eve. I sure am, and I'm so happy to welcome a renowned New York Times best-selling author, Tom Clavin, who worked with Bob Drury on the book we're going to be talking about. But Tom has a best-selling author, has worked as a newspaper, website editor, magazine writer, TV and radio commentator, reporter for the New York Times, received awards from the Society of Professional Journalists, Marine Corps Heritage Foundation, National Newspaper Association. He's written a slew of books, and the new one, and you are going to absolutely love it, as did the Wall Street Journal, their review of it. Welcome to the program, Tom Clavin, here to talk about your book, Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. It's a pleasure to have you on today, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Everybody knows about Daniel Boone, kind of one of those legendary things. I know when I was a little kid, Tom, Disney had the Daniel Boone show. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Ben Parker.
Yeah, there you go. Right. I couldn't remember his name. Oh, yes.
Yep.
But, you know, it's like legendary stuff, almost like Paul Bunyan kind of legendary stuff. But that's not really who the real guy Daniel Boone was. He had a rather interesting life. Let's start off with, he was a Revolutionary War hero, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things, I think probably the most overlooked thing about Daniel Boone is that, you know, everybody thinks of Revolutionary War, understandably. You think about George Washington, Virginia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. But there was an entire western part to the Revolutionary War where the coalition of British and Indian tribes were trying to basically attack George Washington from the west. And Daniel Boone and the fort that he erected in what is now known as Kentucky held off in this long siege against this British Indian-led army that if it had failed, if Boone had not had that leadership to make that siege withstand successfully, who knows what would have happened? We might not have had the American Revolution that we know today.
That is true. And it's kind of odd, as I was reading through the materials and the book, the Appalachian Mountains kind of was the beginning of the last frontier here in America. They hadn't crossed it yet and established it. I'm talking about the period of time when we had the 13 colonies mm-hmm. run by Britain. But Boone was the guy to cross the mountain, basically. I mean, you describe him as a frontiersman. Tom, is that a paying job back then?
Well, you know, frontiersmen, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, it was the beginning of the last frontier, and we call it the first frontier because, you know, everybody was basically stuck on the eastern coast states. And then But beyond the mountains, there was the Ohio Valley. There was what we now call Kentucky and Tennessee. There was all this land that was, you know, appealing. Let's find out what it's like. And Daniel Boone was certainly not the only explorer and hunter to go through the Cumberland Gap and see this beautiful new land that no white man had really ever seen before. But he was the one that was the most prominent, and he was the one that led the others through there. And he was, even in his lifetime, a legendary figure. So where Daniel Boone went, other people followed.
And he was also known as a killer of the Native American inhabitants. What was his position relative to Native Americans? Because they were struggling, the Native Americans were, to push back against the white settlers and the people that what they perceived as invading their property, which a lot of people died as a consequence of that. Where was he on that spectrum?
He was an unusual man for his time, because most men of his generation viewed the Native Americans as savages, as subhuman. They just needed to be gotten out of the way. I mean, even somebody as enlightened, so to speak, as Thomas Jefferson said, well, the only real solution here is to exterminate them.
Mm.
But Boone had grown up, beginning as a child, he had grown up surrounded by Native Americans. You know, his family lived on the edge of the frontier, so there's a lot of interaction. And he respected and admired them. He was fascinated with the way they dressed, the way they conducted themselves. Their survival skills in the forest certainly helped him live a longer life as he did. And when he interacted with them, he was somebody who was going to treat them as equals, and he saw them as intelligent people. So compared to the other people of his generation, he was quite unusual.
But he did end up fighting with them quite a bit in his journeys and travels and settling what then would become Kentucky.
Indeed, as you mentioned just a minute ago, there was a lot of conflict, because the people who were coming from over through the mountains to the west were saying, oh, what a great country here. We can hunt and farm here. And the Indians were saying, well, wait a minute. We're already here.
We're here first.
And we're here first, and we really don't want to accommodate you and make room for you. So there would be a lot of conflict all along the frontier that went on for decades.
One of the accounts in the story, and I just laughed, and it really gives you a profound, I think, understanding. And it's an incident that occurred while he was out traveling. It was, he did spend a lot of time away from his otherwise would-be domestic life, right? He was married to a woman named Rebecca Bryan. He was 21. She was 17 when they got together. But he was gone for more than a year, only to come back. And what happened, Tom?
Well, he came back, and his wife presented him with a daughter named Jemima. And, you know, Boone was not a schooled man, but he knew the basic math. And 9 months ago, he was nowhere near home. And his wife, to her credit, you know, was upfront about it. She said, I thought you were dead, never coming back. You have a brother who looks just like you. And we sought comfort in each other's arms. And Boone's reaction was, well, I'm glad at least you kept it in the family. And as he also was to say about his wife, which was kind of an enlightened viewpoint, too, he said, I married a full-blooded woman, not a portrait of a saint.
See, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, she committed infidelity, and he just went, yeah, basically we're all full of faults. But he also admitted to his own infidelity with Native Americans when he was on the road, too, Tom, didn't he?
Well, yes. Again, to his credit, he didn't pretend that he had the high moral road here also. So, but he and Rebecca were devoted to each other. They were married for 56 years, and they even though he had these long trips away from home, he always came back. He always, you know, was devoted to his wife and his family, which is one of the, I think, better traits about Daniel Boone.
And he had some serious longevity. I mean, you mentioned how long he was married to his wife, but he also was still a bit of I'll use the word frontiersman again, up until his mid-70s.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating part of his life, too. First of all, at the time when the average, you know, lifespan for a man was probably 45 years old.
Yeah.
He lived until he was almost 86. But really intriguing is that on his very last long hunt, which is what he called them, the long hunts, when he was 76 years old, he was gone for months and months and months, with not just alone, but with others too, and a couple of his sons. And we believe, according to some of the evidence, that he made it as far as the Yellowstone River before he turned back and returned to Kentucky. And that's fascinating, to be 76 years old and be in the early 1800s and to have that still kind of wanderlust was just amazing to us.
Tom, something else that just struck me as interesting. I guess society has changed a lot. I don't know. I'm pretty certain, rather, I know how it would be received if I went home and told my wife I'm going to be gone for the next, oh, I don't know, year and a half. I'll be back when I'm back, maybe. I mean, how does a guy get away with that?
Well, You know, in those days, many people were farmers, so you didn't leave the farm.
Right.
There were also people like Daniel Boone, and their occupation was hunter, and their occupation was – and it's funny, too, because you don't have necessarily – your occupation is not explorer. But Daniel Boone had always grown up very restless, and when his wife married him, she knew that. And she knew that she couldn't say, Dan, take out the garbage and come right back. You know, it was he was an explorer. He was a hunter. He had this restlessness. He wanted to see what America was all about, or the America that was being discovered. And so I'm sure she didn't like that he was gone so long, but that was the nature of who he was.
Well, maybe his brother was the farmer, and he was around all the time to fill in when Daniel Boone couldn't be there. Tom Clavin, a fascinating book. Congratulations on another home run. You have so many books out there. I'd spend most of the time talking about those if we did. Blood and Treasure is the name of it. Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. You can get it on my blog page, 55KRC.com. Of course, all the regular places you buy books. And again, congratulations on the outstanding book review that appeared in the Wall Street Journal by Peter Cousins, who's an author himself.
Peter Cousins is a tremendous writer, and to have him enjoy the book so much is very flattering.
Rave reviews. Tom, we'll all enjoy the book. We'll all get a copy. I know my listeners are dying to read it. Blood and Treasure. Tom, great talking to you, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back on your show.
Stay well. We'll talk again soon. Another It is 7:53, 55KRC, the talk station. Coming up, Jack Carr got a new book. We've talked to Jack before, Devil's Hand, which is described as a thriller. So it's going to be a great book. He was a former Navy SEAL, and this time, you know, it sounds so much like reality because we all know Joe Biden says he's pulling out of Afghanistan. Excuse me, we've been there for 20 years. Get a load of the lead in on this one. It's been 20 years since 9/11, two decades since the United States was attacked on home soil and embarked on 20 years of war. The enemy has been patient, learning, and adapting. And the enemy is ready to strike again. We'll see if that has any bearing on reality, since if they're ready to strike again, leaving Afghanistan may be a problem. Although I do think we've been there quite a long time. And this on the heel, you remember the history of Afghanistan, you know, prior to us being there for 20 years, I think the Russians were there for about 13 or something, and they failed epically. So there's lessons to be learned out there. Maybe the Afghan people just don't want to be controlled by an outside force. The libertarian in me can kind of grasp that and understand that. I certainly wouldn't want, Governor DeWine, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, somebody like that coming in and telling me how to live my life. Just a thought. But Jack Carr will be up next on that. And the funny story from this morning, I got to bring it back up because it is so unbelievably preposterous and stupid. And it's an idea that came out of the Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot's pea brain. No one should die as a result of a foot chase. This, speaking to reporters at a press conference the other day, she is now considering changes to the Chicago police policies that will require officers on the street to get permission from their supervisor before engaging in a foot chase. Now, I know you're laughing already, and there's a bunch of reasons to laugh at the stupidity of all of this. Anyway, first off, people don't die as a consequence of foot chases, Ms. Lightfoot. They die as a consequence of some unlawful, illegal behavior or a police officer having to open fire on someone who has put them in a position where they fear for their life. There's that. That would be at the end of the foot chase when the perp turns around with a firearm. That's how you'll die, not because of the running. Now, you could die as a foot chase if you're chasing somebody who's got a bad heart or is on fentanyl with a bad heart. There's always that possibility. But they've had experience with this because previously they enacted a rule which says you can't go on car chases, right? You're not allowed to chase because it's dangerous. And Dan Hills and I talked about this morning. He understands that. They have a no-chase policy with downtown or with the Cincinnati Police Department for the same reason. You don't want to start going 100 miles an hour in the middle of a residential area. Whatever, fine. What they found is that after they put that policy in place, more vehicles started fleeing from police officers because word got out, right? That makes sense. No kidding. So with that background, she's saying, officers, you're not allowed to engage in a foot chase until you get permission. By the time the permission comes in, I mean, I bet the perp can put at least a couple of blocks between himself and the officer, right? This is what Lori Lightfoot had to say. I don't want people out there who are dangerous to think, well, if I just run, then I'm safe. I can continue to wreak havoc. We can't live in that world either, close quote. Well, you just created that world because you told the perps that they're not going to be followed if you... This is why I rally against you relying on elected officials for anything. They're idiots most of the time. Got some kind of agenda that has nothing to do with reality and is certainly not going to benefit you or your world. Get them out of it. 7:56, got Devil's Hand, Jack Carr coming up next. I hope you can stick around.
While you work, we work on the latest developments and breaking news.
1201, our top story.
At work on 55KRC, the talk station.
It's 8:05, fast approaching 8:06, at 55KRC, the talk station. Happy Friday Eve to you. Pleased to welcome my next guest. I know you're going to know who he is. Let me just give you a little background on before I introduce him. Special Operations Team is what he led as a team leader, platoon commander, troop commander, and task unit commander. Over his 20 years in naval special warfare, he transitioned from an enlisted SEAL sniper to a junior officer leading assault and sniper teams in Iraq and Afghanistan, to a platoon commander practicing counterinsurgency in southern Philippines, to commanding Special Operations Task Unit in the most Iranian-influenced section of southern Iraq, throughout the tumultuous drawdown of U.S. forces, fairly recently retired, honorably so, from the United States Marine Corps, former Navy SEAL, and prolific author, you've been waiting for it, the latest in the Terminal List series, Jack Carr. Welcome back to the 55KRC Morning Show, sir.
No, man, thank you so much for having me on.
And let me start by thanking you for your unbelievable service to our country. My listeners, I truly appreciate it, and we have profound respect for American military here on the 55KRC Morning Show. So I was pleased as I could be to have you back on and talk about this new book, because folks who are fans of the Terminal List series know that James Reese is back in your new book. Jack, tell us about it.
That's right. So each book has a distinctly different theme, and that first one was really all about revenge without constraint. And actually, they're filming that one in L.A. right now with Chris Pratt playing James Reese, so yeah, for a series for Amazon, which is pretty cool. Second one, True Believers, with Journey of Redemption. Third one, Savage Son, explores the dark side of man through the dynamic of hunter and hunted. And then for this one, for The Devil's Hand, I really wanted to take a look at something I thought about a lot while I was in the SEAL teams and what I continue to think about today as an author and a citizen, which is, what has the enemy learned by watching us on the field of battle for the last 20 years at war? They've essentially been watching us play poker, seeing how we play those cards, and taking those lessons and applying them to future battle plans. So I thought, what if I'm Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, a super empowered individual, a terrorist organization? What would I have learned? And then what would I have applied to future battle plans if I was ready to strike again? So, well, that formed the basis of the novel.
Is that not the mechanism of conflict? I mean, is that not something that the United States does vis-a-vis its foes?
We do, and typically the enemy is a little more agile than we are, because both on the military side of the house and obviously on the political side of the house, we're a gigantic bureaucracy. The enemy, typically, especially terrorist organizations, don't have to deal with as much red tape, and they can pivot a little quicker than we can, as we saw on the battlefield in Iraq and Afghanistan over the last almost two decades now. So it's all a game of adaptation. You're always adapting to the enemy. Enemy's always adapting to you. You're always looking for gaps in the enemy's defense, capitalizing on momentum, but I wanted to take a look at this one and really put myself in the enemy's shoes, and I did that for over a year. So when COVID hit in early 2020, the enemy was learning from our response to COVID, and a summer of civil unrest that continues today, enemy's learning from that. Yeah. And a very contentious political season and election cycle, the enemy's not just watching these things with a passing interest. They are taking notes. And they're applying those notes to battle plans.
Well, Jack Carr, I would argue that the enemy, not the enemy that's depicted in your book, the in Afghanistan and the terrorists and the like, but certainly the Chinese and the Russians and the North Koreans and anybody else who really has a disdain for the United States delights and foments and encourages the division through, you know, vis-a-vis troll farms or fostering and encouraging through funding these different organizations that divide us. I mean, that it's just brilliant to watch them operate in spite of how scary it is for the fabric of America, Jack.
Yeah, we're certainly not making it too difficult on them.
No.
And I outlined this book in August of 2019, so it became much more timely, not knowing that 2020 was going to be such a pivotal year in the history of our country. But last October, November, I ran into a problem, and that was, if I was the enemy, I would probably just sit back and watch. We're doing a pretty good job of tearing ourselves apart from the inside here. So I had to figure that part out and come up with a reason that they needed to strike in a more timely fashion. So, but we were certainly not making it hard on them with our internal division right now.
No question. Jack Carr, that's why your books are so good. You apply all of what you learned through the two decades of Navy SEAL special warfare in the different areas of the world you live in. You apply the reality to fiction books. So they very well could be works of nonfiction the way you've applied the background to it, right, Jack? I mean, that's really what we've got here.
And that's why I think they resonated with Simon & Schuster when they first see thousands of these books cross their desks every year. That's why this, that first one stood out to them and why it stood out to Chris Pratt for him to option it and to Amazon to jump in here and make a series out of it.
Yeah.
Is because really, they're all fiction, but what I draw upon really are the feelings and emotions behind certain events I was involved with downrange, and I apply those feelings and emotions to a completely fictional narrative. So even though it's all made up, and it's a thriller, well, the feelings and emotions come from a real place, so it feels authentic, and that's really what's made it resonate with Amazon and with Simon & Schuster and with readers.
Well, if I had if I was you, Jack, and had authored these books, and I had someone like Chuck Norris refer to my work as absolutely intense, I'd have that in quotes and framed on my wall in my office, Jack.
I think I'm going to do that.
He's you should.
Fantastic, and he FaceTimed me out of the blue right before the book came out, and just an incredible guy. So nice, so kind, such a patriot. I can't say enough good things about him.
He really is. He really is. All right, Jack, I'm going to apply your knowledge and experience with regard to Afghanistan and ask, I think it's a valuable question, particularly given the context of your book we're talking about here, The Devil's Hand. What the hell is it about the Afghanistan people that makes our time there, the 20 years there, almost look like we have had zero success? We haven't moved the line of scrimmage at all. And that's after how about 13 years of the Soviets trying the same thing? Did they learn from warfare with the Soviets how to deal with us? Is this just a waiting game and they just want to be left alone? Jack, what's the mindset of the people of Afghanistan?
Yeah, well, mountains make for hard people if you go back in history. We certainly had a lot of data and research that we could have delved into before going into Afghanistan, which is what we expect of our senior level leaders is to make those good strategic level decisions. We can go back to look at how much trouble Genghis Khan even had in Afghanistan, and he obviously had no rules to play by. We look at Alexander the Great also. He had a tough time in Afghanistan. Then we have three British excursions in the 19th century and early 20th century, and we have the Soviet experience starting in 1979. So we had a lot of data to look at, and we confused commitment with victory, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. That was what I refer to as imperial hubris. And today, what we need to do going forward is to take those lessons and apply them to our future decisions as wisdom, and that's really what we owe those guys who didn't make it home.
Yeah, and that's the part I always think about. You know, I heard Joe Biden announce the other day that he's planning on having all the troops out by, you know, 9/11 of all days to choose, Jack. It's almost like it's a nod to the success of bombing of 9/11 bombings, but
yeah.
Withdrawing the troops from Afghanistan. So we are doing exactly what the Soviets did and just pulling out and saying, sorry, we can't accomplish anything here. Is that effectively what it is, Jack? And is that the right direction to go based on your experience and what you know about the Afghan people?
Yeah. So when I got there, they had a saying, and it was, the Americans have all the watches, but we have all the time. I incorporated that line into my first novel, and it's very, very true. And they knew that because they know their history. And we tend to think of things in terms of 4-year election cycles, maybe 8 for the really deep thinkers among us. But we went in to disrupt al-Qaeda operations, which we did, destroy al-Qaeda operations, which we eventually did, even though it still exists in pockets. And then we shifted some goals to reconstruction, nation building, counter-corruption, which is just a part of the system over there, looking at bribery and extortion and drug trafficking and all that sort of thing. And then we wanted to address some terrorist sanctuaries in Pakistan and Iran. So we essentially tackled something, tried to tackle something that was multi-generational in nature and apply a short-term strategy to a long-term conflict, which is obviously proven not to have been the most successful strategy.
No question about it. Jack Carr, it is always a distinct pleasure to talk with you, and brilliant work you write. Jack Carr's The Devil's Hand, you can find it on my blog page, 55krc.com. A great thriller with the returning character of James Reese, who in the book is entrusted with a top-secret CIA mission of retribution that's been 20 years in the making, as thumbnail sketched out by my guest Jack Carr this morning. Jax, thanks for for writing them, and we enjoy reading them. We'll keep doing that, and I'll keep having you on the 55KRC Morning Show. I expect we'll have this conversation about your next book probably about 1 year from now.
That's right. I'm deep into it right now.
I know.
Thank you so much.
Got to assume that, man. You just got all that information. Just get it out in another book form. We'll look forward to it. Jack, we'll have you on again. Take care and stay well, my friend.
You too. Take care.
815 55 KRC, the talk station. Got a little bit to talk about before we get to the bottom of the hour with Jay Ratliff, our, of course, iHeartMedia aviation expert. Scott, for information about the air industry's losses and it is 8:20 at 55KRC Talk Station. I hope you're having a decent Thursday, Friday Eve. Our aviation expert. It's actually iHeartMedia's aviation expert because he's kind of nationwide. Jay Ratliff will join us next, and we'll get the hot topics going on in the aviation world as we do every Thursday at 8:30. In the meantime, a couple other things. We just want to remind folks, today's the big day. The House is teeing up D.C. statehood, and it's expected to pass in the House. The only holdup is going to be the Senate. Biggest challenge, they claim, 50-50 split in the Senate. That's assuming everybody is lockstep, party-affiliated, voting in the same way. Legislative filibuster is still in place. So, therefore, to pass this, it would require 60 votes. Now, Steny Hoyer calling for, ending what he referred to as the undemocratic filibuster. And that would allow the statehood bill to pass in the upper chamber with only a simple majority like the House. Now, remember, the Democrats are responsible for ending the filibuster vis-a-vis judicial nominees. And, you know, did that help the Democrats? I mean, if you're a Democrat out there, you got to be going, yeah, well, that may not have been a very good idea because we really didn't see Donald Trump coming. And, you know, we on the conservative side of the ledger, the libertarian side of the ledger, a little L as far as I'm concerned, but, you know, embrace the idea of a strict interpretation judiciary. You know, the Constitution has meaning. The words are there or they're not there. They mean what they say. And not to be a judicial activist. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but you get the idea. This is just how it works. So Donald Trump was able to appoint, I think, more judges than any president previous, at least a whole bunch of them, transforming a lot of jurisdictions that were otherwise far liberal into something a little more resembling what the rule of law is. And, of course, that increases the pool of potential judges for the Supreme Court at some point. And, look how many judges Donald Trump was able to appoint to the Supreme Court. You know? It's a fortuity of life. Sometimes you die. Or everybody dies. It's a question of when. And the liberals lost 3 on Donald Trump's watch. Right? Judicial appointments went through with a mere majority. That's because the Democrats had changed the rules, resulting in a great success, at least in the hearts and minds of more conservative-minded folks, for Donald Trump. And you know they had to be kicking themselves every time another judge got appointed, like, oh, we didn't get rid of that filibuster. Well, here they are going to do it again for legislation. Now, the big concern is if they did get rid of the filibuster, or rather do for legislation, then this will be a railroad job from here until the next major election. A total railroad job. You have to wait till 2022 to hopefully transform the dynamic and the makeup of Congress to unring the bells that will be rung between now and then if they end the legislative filibuster. It's political expediency is what this amounts to. We just will get it done, get it done. We don't have to have debate. We don't need party. We don't need bipartisanship. We don't even need to discuss it. That's the reality of getting rid of the filibuster. There's not even going to be discussion on the merits or lack thereof on any particular piece of legislation. You'll get your Green New Deal. Congratulations. You'll get the George Floyd Reform and Policing Act. Yeah, it sounds like a lovely name, doesn't it? But, you know, the reality is it is federal standards placed on local law enforcement. Segue to a federal police department. I had a conversation with a listener this morning about that one. It's because it's suffice it to say, and this is what's going on right now, and you think about calls to defund the police, condemning police, like this Makia Bryant shooting. I mean, the cop saved another girl's life by ending the one girl with a knife's life. She was going to stab him in that other girl in the head. But condemning even that and doxing the particular officer, I think was it LeBron James posting a picture of him saying, "You're next"? The environment for policing has obviously deteriorated, and a lot of police have quit already. We're having a difficult time getting enough people to show up to actually apply to be police. So you gradually whittle away, and then you take away the budget of police, which necessarily means fewer police officers. You whittle away the effectiveness of law enforcement in any given area, and then what happens? Chaos ensues. And I'm not talking about a declaration of martial law, but you know what? It creates an environment, an unstable, unsafe environment, because we have condemned police as basically irredeemable racists or something. And then people clamor for some government help. Oh, please, please, please help us. Well, there's Joe Biden or whoever willing to put, yeah, federal officers on the street. I suggest that they would probably be wearing jack boots and demanding your papers, which will include papers showing which party you're affiliated with. Aviation expert Jay Ratliff, next, after I mentioned affordable medical imaging. These folks are great at affordable medical imaging. First off, they get it. In order to keep costs down for you, have an office with low overhead. That's what it's all about. Why does a hospital charge $3,000 for an MRI? And they do, some do. It's because it's a fat profit center. They got massive space to take care of. What? .831 right now at 55 Care CD Talk Station, it being Thursday. Regular listeners know we're going to have a conversation with iHeartMedia's aviation expert and stock trader, Jay Ratliff. Welcome back to the program, my friend. It's always good to have you on.
Hey, pleasant good morning to you.
Question first, as I occasionally do, I got to dive into this question because I'm staring at this cryptocurrency that I bought at my son's recommendation. I got it at, like, it's a 2-center, and it's now up to about 16 cents, which means I made quite a bit of profit so far, Jay, and maybe hope that it hits a buck or something or turns into Bitcoin or whatever. I would be an extraordinarily wealthy man. Now, Jay, I also have to add, and that this one was selected by my son because of the technology that they use, and he thinks it's going to blow up, and so fine. So mm-hmm. I bought some Digibyte. But I don't understand, honestly, Jay Ratliff. It's like the peace of God. Cryptocurrency, there's a bunch of ones and zeros floating out there, and and you mine this data in order to find money, and it's all traded electronically. There's nothing physical about it. I always think, you know, what happens the day the electricity quits working? I got stacks of $100 bills and $50 bills in my backup, you know, that I can work with. I couldn't get my cryptocurrency if the lights went out. Jay, can you give me any insight on this?
Well, you know, the idea when all this, you know, took off a decade plus ago was the idea if there was some sort of a digital currency that could be used around the world, it means you wouldn't have to have 180 different currencies in your billfold. You could use this currency as you needed to, and the thought was it was the kind of the wave of the future. The problem is it's not regulated at all, and it's based more on what people are willing to pay for it versus what a company's performance is from a profit and loss standpoint.
Right.
I think Warren Buffett explained it the best when he said it's not a company, it's a craze. And when you have this social media mentality like we have today where you have this herd mentality of people following the leader, what ends up happening is somebody will throw something out there like the Dogecoin or whatever, and it will go up in value simply because people are talking about it, not because from a performance standpoint it's a company that's doing exceedingly well. So when the interest isn't there, it starts to drop, and then you have a celebrity or, you know, the head of a company kind of mention it, a headline that may pop out, and boom, it goes across social media, and you might see the stock jump up, you know, 25-50% or what have you. But it's an extremely volatile thing that, you know, my students and I have day traded and flipped some company stock that's connected to Bitcoin itself with some of the blockchains. But, you know, the idea here is that you need to be very, very careful. I don't know any serious investor that's looking at plugging this in with any significant amount of money anyways for a long term period of time. And the other issue, Brian, I get emails from people all the time saying, my gosh, Jay, if I'd have kept my Bitcoin shares that I had from, you know, it's like, come on, like you would have waited till it hit $65,000 a share before you would have sold. I mean, you know, that's just not going to be the case. But in a pyramid scheme, that's exactly what it is, because you're buying shares and you're hoping that a new inflow of some new investors will help come in and push you up higher so that, right, another level can come in after that. And just as quickly some of these things skyrocket, they drop. And the problem is many times when people get into this, they don't know when they're going to exit. So it becomes a very emotional type decision, and you lose any time you buy or sell on emotion. We see that every day on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the case with a lot of these cryptocurrencies.
Well, you know, I obviously have made multiple times over the initial 2 cent per share investment.
I would say so.
That's just play money I was using, you know what I'm saying? So this win, lose, draw, it's like going to the roulette wheel at the casino. You know, I'll do that once every couple of years and lose $200, but in this case, I bought a little bit more Digibyte than that. But there was the reason Jerry convinced me, my son, to do it is because they have a certain technology that apparently is valuable and marketable beyond just the cryptocurrency itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there is a desire, like the traditional PE ratios and traditional market forces that apply to particular stocks. This one at least had some value that I understood beyond this fake stuff that's floating around out there, Jay.
And guys like you and I need that stuff that we can look at.
I know.
I totally agree.
Call me traditional, Jay.
But, no, yeah. that's how you succeed long term, my friend. You know that because you make the right kinds of decisions. And that's like people that try to time a market or try to do this or that. They're going to lose, you know, almost every single time. No, they'll do it once and then fail the next 23 times.
Like they always brag about the winnings at the casino. They never tell you about the losses.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
Jay, hold on. We're going to come back. We'll actually talk aviation with our aviation expert and stock expert, Jay Ratliff. Thank you for settling that for me, Jay. I knew I was in, dangerous waters anyhow. 836-55 KRCD Talk Station. I can now mention. AM 1340, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Ryan Thomas here with Jay Ratliff, iHeartMedia aviation expert. Time to actually talk about aviation issues since I took us down a cul-de-sac relating to stocks, but he does know his stock. Now, on to the airline industry, and we've been talking losses for a long time for a lot of reasons, most notably the ripple effect of COVID. So what's the story of 2021? I understand we got some revised figures.
Yeah, the International Air Transport Association came out yesterday saying that the projected losses for the airline industry worldwide was expected to be $38 billion. They have revised that up, unfortunately, to $48 billion as the expected loss worldwide. And Brian, they think that it could go up past that as we progress through the year. Things are not going as quickly as we would like in many areas. And this is on top of last year's $127 billion hit that the industry took worldwide. So, we're moving in the right direction, but obviously not as fast as we would like.
Well, and in terms of definitional accuracy, let us define airline industry. That would be just the airlines themselves, as opposed to the 1 out of 10 jobs relating to travel.
Oh, yeah.
And air. Okay, so
you're exactly right. So in other words, that's just the airlines themselves.
Whoa!
And when you look at that, it's staggering. There's really no other way to look at it, because when you look at the history of aviation and things that have rocked us over the years, we've never had anything like this. After the attacks of 9/11, you had a 15% drop in traveling. After the pandemic last year, we had a 96% drop in traffic. And the International Air Transport Association represents about nearly 300 airlines in about 120 countries. So that loss of $48 billion is just contained within the airlines themselves. And, of course, all the other support companies, the hotels, the cars, and everyone that, that supplies various things to airlines, you know, the losses would be even higher than that.
Yeah, you know, and it's just profound when I see, you know, the market conditions, the you know, S&P, and not to go back to stocks necessarily, but as a reflection of wealth generation, the economy doing pretty darn well, generally speaking, at least the numbers that we hear. Of course, we know the housing industry is doing well and the building industry is doing really well. And there's a lot of demand out there for folks to come and fill open positions and jobs. So that there's that many billions and billions of dollars lost from the global economy related to airline travel, it's just shocking that, you know, the broader picture isn't more impacted.
Correct. And, you know, I'm in Savannah this week, and there's a local restaurant, the Crab Shack. They're trying to find a cook, and they're offering a $3,000 signing bonus.
Whoa!
So when you see that, it speaks to what you're saying with regards to just, you know, how difficult it is sometimes to fill some of these positions and things we have. And, you know, the one thing with the airline industry right now is they're looking at the number of people that are flying per day, and we're averaging about 1.5 million people per day that are flying domestically in the United States. Normally, that number is about 2.5 million. So we're seeing an increase in the number of people flying month after month. But, Brian, most of this is on the leisure side of things.
Yeah.
And not the corporate side, which is really when the airlines need that cash. That's 70% of where they've made their money in the past. And that's why at CBG, we've seen United Airlines add in some nonstop destinations to some leisure-specific cities.
There you go.
To try to take advantage. In fact, yesterday, American Airlines announced they're giving us 4 nonstops to Boston as of November 2nd. That's big news from them. That's going to be, I think, the 10th destination for American Airlines out of Cincinnati with those 3 daily nonstops to Boston, and that's being very well received. So
that's not a bad city to visit, man.
Oh, I love Boston.
Yeah.
If you love history even a little bit, walk the free. Look, when you can go to the room where they planned the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah.
If that doesn't give you chills, I don't know what does.
And we ate, I guess it's still there, the oldest bar in the country, or you know the one I'm talking about. My wife and I ate there, and it's, I mean, it looks like the oldest bar and restaurant in the country.
It's incredible. In the Parker House up there.
What
a great place to spend the night right there on Freedom Trail, and you got the cemeteries with all, you know, half the revolutionary heroes that are buried there. It's just, it's incredible to look at the, and it makes you appreciate, you know, what we have.
You're right.
To be able to pop up there with some of these fares that we've got in and out of Cincinnati, which is incredible. But tell you what, Brian, the average fares, in fact, Cincinnati, again, ranked, I think, 80th in the latest Department of Transportation ranking, lowest fares in 25 years out of Cincinnati.
That is great.
But those fares are starting to go up. So as we've discussed for months, if you're planning on taking a trip anytime this year, even at early part of next year, now's the time to grab those tickets, because if airlines don't see the corporate side coming back as they need, they're going to make up for that lost revenue the only way they can, raising fares on the leisure side of things. So, you know, let's not give the airlines any more money than we want, that we can. Buy those tickets early, lock them in, and it guards us against any future fare increases.
Yeah, my daughter's on a plane right now down to Florida, and they got an unbelievably low rate. So it's just amazing. You're never going to.
It's great when we can take advantage of the airlines, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. All right, now, but continuing a theme here, the losses from the 2021 estimated losses, international travel, you indicate, is soft. So that's obviously another coupling factor. So what's the story in international travel?
Yeah, we're being kind using the soft word. In some cases, it's non-existent. But mainly because, I mean, the State Department came out with their no-go list.
Yeah.
Countries that they don't suggest us traveling to. It's up to 137. It's like 80% of the world we're being told not to travel to. And, of course, you have a lot of people that are still hesitant to fly internationally for all the obvious reasons of the restrictions that they may face, what's open, what's not. So when you look at that, it's one of the reasons United Airlines this week reported just a really crushing a quarterly loss, because of the fact that they are heavy on the international side of things. So they are seeing an uptick in some future reservations internationally, which is good to see, which means hopefully by this fall going into the end of the year, we'll start seeing some sort of a rebound. I don't think the international travel is going to be here for summer. I would love for that to be the case. But right now, things are just progressing too slowly on the international front for us to see it. So it could be the pandemic could affect international travel for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, when you say no-go as the 80% of the world and this long list of countries that the State Department has identified, because and it's because of COVID, right?
It is many of them. Now, some, it's because of political unrest and things that are going on in the country. But, you know, for the most part, that's it. And look, for people that are they're wanting to fly to various cities in Europe, wherever it might have to be, South Africa and Asia, you know, places that we would normally go to for a vacation. A lot of people canceled it last year, fully confident that within a year, things would be somewhat back to normal, and they're shocked to find out that's not the case.
Well, I drew a parallel this morning, Jay, before we get to your hub updates. The parallel I drew is if they declare certain countries you cannot go to, the State Department forbids you from going there for whatever fill-in-the-blank reason, it reminded me for some reason of the Berlin Wall. You know, it's the Berlin Wall designed to keep people in a place that they would like to get out of. If you just declare that international travel was now not allowed, basically you have held hostage an entire population of people, Jay.
Yeah, but, you know, fortunately for the airlines, they're still able to ship a great deal of cargo, which is where they're making a lot of the money right now. In fact, some airlines have even gone to the extreme of removing some seats or even strapping cargo into seats because the cargo compartment is so stuffed with cargo. That's one of the things internationally that's kind of saved airlines, because through the pandemic, the only thing that really we saw a huge surge in through the entire time was the amount of cargo being shipped. So, you know, at least the planes are flying, and many times it's a cargo trip with the passenger revenue kind of added on top of it, because it's very, very light on many of these destinations and flights. And airlines really need that segment to come back. Think of it. International travel is soft. The corporate travel side is soft. The only thing that's really solid at this point is the increasing number of leisure traffic. And remember, that's not going to last at this level for an extended period of time. That's eventually going to throttle back. And that's when it's going to get very interesting to see what happens, which is why I'm still a little bit not as optimistic as I would like on some airline stocks moving forward, because if the dynamics of the business model for them change, they're not going to be making the money they were before the pandemic. And that's what everyone's counting on, and that may not be the case.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think more pessimistic about it than even you are. Jay Ratliff, as you always do, you wrap up with hub delays. If we're traveling today, what do we need to worry about?
I got some headaches going through Denver, and then New York and Boston going to have some weather delays there that could be on and off close to an hour. We had some de-icing and snow delays this morning throughout the Midwest, which was just staggering. But we'll get past that soon enough. And after other than those three hubs today, should be a pretty good day to fly.
I'm glad to hear that, at least for my daughter's sake anyway. Jay Ratliff, always a distinct pleasure having you on. Until next Thursday at 8:30 when we'll do this again. I hope you and your family stay well.
You as well. Thank you.
Safe travels. 8:49 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station, USA Insulation to the rescue. It's 8:53 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Thursday or Friday Eve. Friday in the morning show, of course. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter. We're going to have Ron Wilson back in the studio tomorrow at 8. And Jason Williams from Politics Extra and other columns in the Cincinnati Inquirer has been a regular guest on Fridays, and we'll continue that trend. 8:40 tomorrow with Jason Williams. Always has an interesting observation about local politics. A story I didn't get to real quick this morning. I got a kick out of this. Governor Kevin Stitt, Oklahoma's governor, just signed into law a couple of bills that, well, give you a little bit more leeway when dealing with demonstrators. They were a little upset that he signed into this. They barged into the state capitol, prompting the House and Senate chambers to lock their doors. Oh, my God. Violence insurrection from the left. They were protesting, in part, a bill that increases the penalties for blocking roadways and grants, here's the salient part, grants immunity to motorists who kill or injure protesters on the road. Yeah. Another bill seeks to limit doxing of police officers. Of course, that's exposing police officers and their personal information online. Awful, awful stuff. But the bill makes blocking the use of a public street a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in prison or a $5,000 fine. And the measure also grants motorists criminal and civil immunity if they kill or injure someone while fleeing from a riot. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of devil in the detail stuff going on here, but, you know, it was predicated on the fact that they had this the guy who wrote the bill, Rob Standridge, said he was called to action by an incident in Tulsa where a pickup truck drove through a crowd protesting George Floyd's death on the Tulsa interstate. Some of the protesters forced to the edge of the overpass, several injured, one was paralyzed from the waist down. The driver, whose family was in the car, wasn't charged. They were terrified. You get surrounded by an angry mob and you can't leave, you can't flee, bad things happen. Well, at least in the state of Oklahoma. Sounds to me like you got a little flee leeway. And word will get around that people are entitled to flee a riot. So as long as you have the predicate there, I'd watch the hell out for cars and be prepared to pay a big fine for blocking roadways. Jay Ratliff was on today. Jack Carr, get a copy of his new book, Devil's Hand. Tom Clavin, amazing book about Daniel Boone, Blood and Treasure. And, of course, Dan Reginald's lawsuit he filed against the State Board of Education here in Ohio. They're coming at you with Marxist ideology, and Dan is not having it. Find the podcast of that conversation. Stick around. Glenn Beck's next.
Hollywood is under siege from an external force. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream is now making nightmares a reality. Many major films appease the Chinese Communist Party to be distributed in China. Join Tiffany Meyer, an investigative reporter, in Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, where she reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.